obviously, rule number one is respectful and professional conduct. So we ask that all participants, you know, agree to keep conversation respectful and professional. We won't tolerate profanity towards any person, place, or thing. And we do want to make everybody aware, and we'll repeat it throughout the session, that, you know, this session is being recorded. Just for full disclosure, you know, the intent is to use the valuable information, and then actually, as I get into explaining, you know, why we're doing this, but towards, you know, giving the task force that's been, created by the state of California, just information from the community and all the community, you know, of California. So you can be in Southern California, Northern California. Next ground rule is truthful discussion and communication. It's titled "With America's Ready for the Truth." A lot of what you will hear on this call, can and will be backed up by factual information. So we just ask that you be prepared to share, you know, truths and be open to learning new, any new truths that you may have not known. And then last but not least, you know, I reemphasize that, you know, we ask that, we make it known that these calls, you know, this session and further sessions are going to be recorded. But with that being known, that, you know, there's a speaking time in order. And so we will bring individuals up to the stage. If you're on the stage, please keep your mic muted until called upon. And please don't speak over another individual. Hold your thought, and we'll get through individuals as fast as we can, but with a time limit so that everybody can potentially have the time to speak. But we will, you know, begin the conversations, you know, with ourselves. We'll open up with some conversation. And if you'd like to speak, raise your hand. We'll bring as many up to the stage as possible that, you know, want to speak. So raise your hand. Anyone of the moderators can and will do that. With that being said, I'll just go ahead and share the introduction as to why we're here. And that's primarily, you know, for those of you that don't know, AB 3121 was a task force to study reparations, you know, California's role in slavery and reparations for the state of California. That actually passed the Assembly, made it through the Senate, and passed. And so there's a task force that's been designed or comprised with members. I forget if there's 9 or 7. I think they're 9 members. I'm not sure. Comprised of Northern and Southern California individuals, from doctors to individuals with, I believe, law backgrounds as well on this task force. And their job is to, you know, over a 2-year period, study, one, California's involvement in slavery and why reparations is warranted for California. And then, two, what would reparations look like for California? So a 2-year timeline. Our goal is really throughout this process and having these calls is to, you know, not only educate and provide information to the task force, but educate members of California and other places that may or not know about California's role. You know, frequently individuals on this call will have heard slavery never happened in California because it wasn't a slave state. Well, I'll be here to tell you different. With that being said, I'll go into introductions. And I'll introduce myself last, but, you know, on stage you have, you know, if you're looking at your phone like I am, to my left, there's Donna Bernard, and to my right, Keisha Matthews. Now, Keisha first, I'll do a brief introduction and I'll allow her to say a few words. But, you know, Keisha is a real estate broker, incredible broker, radio host for a nonprofit radio show in Sacramento, Northern California. And we'll be a regular moderator on the stage on this topic. We have many discussions. With that being said, I'll let Keisha say a few words, and then we'll go to Donna.
Thank you, Jonathan. Just kind of want to piggyback to give some basis and information about the Reparations Task Force Committee. The Reparations Task Force Committee consists of Camila Moore, who is the chair, Dr. Amos Brown is a vice chair, Senator Stephen Bradford, Assemblymember Reginald Jones Sawyer, Dr. Cheryl Grills, Lisa Holder, Dr. Jonathan Scott Lewis, Councilmember Monica Montgomery Stepp, and Donald K. Tamaki. And so there are 9 individuals on that task force. The first meeting that was held featured remarks by the governor, as well as the Secretary of State, Shirley Weber, and Attorney General Rob Bonta. Secretary Weber led the effort to pass the bill to create the California Reparations Task Force. That first meeting lasted over 7 hours, and hundreds tuned in, and over a dozen community members made public comments. And if you want to be kept current about the efforts and steps of the task force, you can go to cjecofficial.org and sign up for their newsletter and their alerts, because they are monitoring specifically the task force movement. That's one place where you can go to keep up on that. Again, that's cjecofficial.org. Just to further piggyback on what Jonathan shared about the task force and the committee, again, this group is to create a safe space, a safe environment for individuals to talk about their thoughts on reparations, how we think they should be distributed, if they should be distributed, who should they go to, how much should we get anything at all, whatever your thoughts are, pros and cons, for or against. This is an area to have a safe discussion about that, because we are literally creating this thing as we go. This task force needs to hear from you as they hammer out what this is going to look like. And I'm done.
Well, thank you, Keisha. That was great. Next, I'll introduce Donna Bernard and let her say a few words. And, you know, Donna's got a very interesting, you know, background. I'll let her share a little bit of with you. But, you know, in corporate America, basically helping make Fortune 100, 500 companies what they are today. So, she's got a heart for really what we're talking about. And one of the things that, you know, I'll just kind of dive into, and I'm going to make the statement now, is for those of that are wondering, and I'll probably say this throughout the time in this room, you know, I've been questioned, you know, why is there a white lady on the panel as a moderator talking about reparations when it applies to, you know, California's talking about slavery and blacks. And Keisha gets credit for this, because she has said this through one of the many of our discussions, is that, you know, reparations won't happen without white people. You know, in fact, it won't happen without black people, Asian people, you know, everybody that's a California resident that's going to hold the senators and the people accountable when they go to vote finally on it. Reparations won't happen without you. And so, as Keisha said, this space is a safe place for you to share your opinion, what you do know, and hopefully find out something that you may not know, and it may just change your outlook. Our goal is to kind of provide you with facts that we know, and, you know, make the case as to why or why not, and let the panel know. But I think that, without further ado, I'll let Donna introduce herself, and then we'll dive into the discussion.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yes, I'm Donna Bernard, and I did meet Jonathan in a room. I started on the Clubhouse in early February. It was an opportunity to start listening to other points of view, and I became captivated in this medium to just be able to listen, instead of just the TV or the same people. It was diversity. And, I ended up in a room, Ask a White Girl Anything. And that's how, from my 30-year career in the corporate world, I always sought to speak to different people and learn from different people, and have, you know, I was always curious or always willing to be honest. I'm also white, and I'm not only white, but I'm also Jewish, and I am from northern New Jersey and New York. My grandparents, my grandfather left Russia, you know, in the early 1900s, because of the the you know, the Nazis and the what was going on with the Jewish people in there. And so he came to America and started new. So I met Jonathan in that room, and it's important for us to listen and to understand. And I said to Jonathan, it's not going to happen unless we are all in this conversation together, because when I think of reparations and are you going to take my house back? Because I don't know where the origin of where my own home came from. So we really need to be clear and understand what this will look like. In my corporate career, I wrote large contracts with many large companies, corporations throughout this country. And by the time I got to the signing off, it was already everyone had bought into and understood what they wanted to do. So you don't wait for the last minute. You have a consensus. And then it becomes, of course, we're going to sign off on this. So that's why I said to Jonathan, it's important to work together, because with that, we can get something accomplished. So I'm Donna Bernarda. And that's how you end.
Great, Donna. Thank you for that. And so with that being said, you guys, I'll just brief introduction of myself and, why this topic is so important and why I feel that, I've been, given the burden and the weight to kind of move California through this. My name is Jonathan Burgess, and I am a direct descendant of one of the first pioneers that was brought to California as a slave in 1849, actually 1848. Our great-great-grandfather was brought from, raised in Virginia, ended up in New Orleans, was brought from New Orleans to California, and landed in Coloma where gold was discovered. We know this because he left the family autobiography. And so there have been historians that, prove the documentation. Not only was he brought here, he was sold into slavery after he was here. So for those of you that may be on this call that believe that, California never was a slave state, I'm here to tell you that it, in fact, was. Aside from that, there are a number of documents that we have in our family that I don't want to bore people with, but I will just tell you that one of the things that Donna shared with me as I told her our story, she said, Jonathan, you are the case for reparations. And I say that our family is the case for reparations because we have the documents to prove things that were done to African Americans that were brought to California, which was supposed to be a free state, and left to be enslaved and then taken from. And we were privileged to know that our great-great-grandfather was able to read and write. He was mulatto. He was raised and taught how to read and write and left the documentations. But we're having this conversation because hopefully to educate. And then secondly, I know that there are more stories like ours of maybe people that don't know who their loved ones were. Or there were a number, we're lucky if 1 in 10 slaves could read and write or former slaves. So there's a huge oral narrative that goes into. So I know there are more stories, and that's what part of this is for as we kind of dive into discussion. So without any further ado, I am one of 9 children. There are, I believe, 7 of us that are still living today, maybe 8. But the Burgess legacy will live forever, and we are in California, have been here since 1848, and are still here strong, and will lead the case for reparations for the state of California and be the family to testify as to why. But without further ado, I want to dive in and hear, what you think about reparations. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Why are we doing it? I just want to, Keisha and I and Donna, we're going to dive into some discussion. If you want to come up to the stage, please raise your hand. We'll bring you up. The ground rules, we'll reset the room and kind of go over them. But we just ask that everybody be professional. Understand that this call is being recorded because we will use this data to address the task force for the state of California. And that is with opposition, those opposed to reparations, those for reparations, or those that are in between. And we're not asking you to make a decision today whether you're for it or against it. We just want to get your voice of what your thought is. And I think Donna brings a good point, and I want to make this point known because I want to set the tone for this room. I will tell you, I can prove the wrongs that were done to our family and the land that was taken. But it would be just as wrong for the state of California to take land away from families that got it illegitimately, but they've maintained it over the years and give it back to us. And for that reason, the state of California and the federal government have to make do and pay the debt because they were involved in giving the land. But I wouldn't want somebody to come and move Donna off her land just because it was mine. Well, it was my I can't even say it was mine. It was our great-great-grandfather's. And so, again, we will cover topics where you have fifth-generation farmers today that got here the same time that our family did, and we know how they got their land. And I think that's what scares people when we have the conversation about reparations, because they feel they're going to lose something. That is why the state of California and the federal government have to make right. And we're just talking about land. We haven't got into everything else with reparations. So without further ado,
so we
I'm
have
be quiet.
We have Marjorie Melvin. Jonathan, we have Marjorie Melvin ready to speak.
Perfect. Marjorie, you're on.
Good afternoon, Jonathan, Donna, and Key. Thank you guys for letting me speak. Thank you for this room. And Jonathan and Matthew, congratulations on your recent victory. I've been following what was going on with your family and your fight to have your property in Manhattan Beach returned to you. So congratulations on that victory.
Well, Donna, one second. I just want to clear up, you know, so Manhattan Beach is I believe the Bush family, or Bruce family, we're the family in Northern California, and we're talking about Coloma. So that
well,
is
I'm
just
sorry.
A story, but that's okay.
No, I'm
wanted,
so
I wanted to put it straight for the record, but okay, absolutely. Nope, no worries.
Okay, so what's absolutely amazing is that your family is, like you said, you guys are a case study. You have a tangible and real example of how you all were harmed, and that is outstanding. There are a lot of us, however, who don't have a real tangible ways to show how, as direct descendants of enslaved people, we were harmed. But despite that, I do believe that reparations are important, and I do believe that some sort of repair, recompense should be paid to Black Americans who descended from slavery in the state of California. The form of that, I don't really have an opinion on. I do believe that after a study is done, after information is gathered, after the task force meets, I believe and I hope that an appropriate way to repair the harm that's been done to Black Americans in the state can happen. I want to tell you a little bit about my story. I was born and raised in Southern California. My mother's from Louisiana. Dad is from Texas. Mom, after graduating, became the first Black teacher, head teacher in Compton Unified School District. It was very, very hard for her to get that position because Compton Unified was all white, and they were not allowing Black people, or we just didn't have the opportunities to get into education in the 60s when my mom was there. Dad, after being honorably discharged from the Marines, after incurring a head injury in the war, got used his GI Bill to become educated. He got a degree and couldn't find work in the state of California. And this is despite doing well and being number one in his class. He could not find work. He had to work at, I think it was called Newberry's, cleaning bathrooms. And it was finally through an affirmative action program that he was able to get to Rockwell, and worked at Rockwell, but he was not able to buy a home where he wanted to buy a home. Dad wanted to buy a home in Westchester, a location, a city close to where he was working, but he couldn't do that. He was limited to living in South Los Angeles. So my parents ended up buying in South Los Angeles. So, you know, I share that to say even though I cannot trace my lineage back to enslaved Black Americans, I am able to show how some of the laws, the policies that existed in Southern California, in California period, prevented my family from buying where they wanted to buy, which meant that, of course, we could not develop the wealth that we may have been able to develop.
Marjorie, can I just make a point? Are you talking about like the 60s? Did you say that?
Yes.
Yeah, because I'm here in northern New Jersey. And Cory Booker, who's the senator of our state, he actually lives in the next town from me, and his family had the same struggle. As a matter of fact, his parents had someone else actually go look at the home and buy the home so that they could move in. So this was not this in the 60s. I'm 64. Like, unfortunately, this wasn't just in California. This was where I live too. You know, I worked very hard to campaign for Cory Booker to be the Senate a few years ago. But yeah, that was common probably throughout the whole country.
Exactly. And thank you for sharing that, Donna. So my parents experienced that as well. So we were limited to living in South Central Los Angeles. That's yep. where they bought. And that's where I grew up. And so I saw very tangibly and very real how drugs were brought into South Los Angeles. And I saw, people selling, people using. And it was just a very ugly time in the 80s. And little did I know that it was kind of an orchestrated thing where drugs were brought into the community by agreement, almost by the U.S. government, to allow or to sell weapons in exchange for allowing, I'm not explaining this correctly.
But Marjorie, you know, I just want to just kind of stay on topic with something because, you know, I went to, the topic is also, we had desegregation, right? Because people have been trying to figure out what to do. So they did desegregation and it was a mess. So, you know, the focus here, I think, is what we do about reparations, because we just know that we need to do something, but we know that there's been what we have just hasn't, you know.
I apologize, Donna.
Marjorie, I'd like to actually jump in here on your behalf. I know exactly where you're going with that, and it definitely ties in. And what you're saying is that these communities, we were pushed into these communities. Your father was pushed into this community trying to buy a home. He couldn't buy it where if he had bought it at the time he was going to buy it, would have created generational wealth for your family. He was pushed into this neighborhood that was then governmentally funded by weapons and drugs to bring the neighborhood down, which further decreased the potential of not only your family creating generational wealth, but even getting out of that trap. So I believe that's where you're going. I believe it's a very valid point to make, and I think that it needs to be heard because it ties in together. If we don't talk about that, then we create a gap. A gap that connects us to present day. So that needs to be said.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I had no clue. So thank you. See, this is why we need to listen to each other, because I have no clue of that. And that makes
And that is the power of diversity, because, and that's why, you know, there'll be things that, you know, Donna, you may pick up on that Keisha and I clearly don't, but they're worth discussion. And so, Margie, thank you for that testimony. And again, one of the things that I'll just say, to this entire, you know, the United States of America, California, has kicked this can down the road so long until it's become a massive problem. And it's not your problem, not my problem. It's all of us together, collective. And so, yeah, you know, I can take you back to 1849, but now we're talking, you know, 19. And so there are a number of things that have been done that, you know, will be part, I believe, of the study. And I agree. I know how that affected, that happened not only, you know, to your family, but to our family as well. And just about any black family that was subjected to, you know, what Keisha and I both as real estate brokers would tell you is redlining. You know, I'm sure that, you know, there are, I can tell you there's some neighborhood where those are still written, although they're not enforced, but they're still written in deeds. And there's a topic about it, you know, not long ago where our family could have afforded to live in a prestigious neighborhood, and that would have made a difference in the schools that we went to, or the, you know, just the ability to take money out on your house to, you know, put your kids through college. The way that property value is appreciated in one neighborhood compared to another. All that comes into effect, and I believe those are all things worthy of presenting to the task force as they study this robust problem. And our goal here today is that, you know, we look at all of it. And so thank you for your testimony. And if there's anybody else, you know, that wants to comment, well, I think I brought Dr. Burgess up. We'll have her go shortly.
Yeah, Keisha, Dr. Burgess.
But before that, Keisha, few new people join the room, so if you wouldn't mind doing a reset, that'd be great, and just kind of welcome the new people that just kind of joined.
Yeah, we'd like to welcome everyone to the California Reparations Task Force Community Voices. We are here to create a safe space, a safe environment in which to discuss your thoughts, opinions, feedback about California reparations. As we understand, AB 3121 is the assembly bill that was enacted on September 30th, 2020, and established a task force to study and develop reparation proposals for African Americans. And it charges the California Department of Justice with providing administrative, technical, and legal assistance to the task force. We are actually experiencing history and can be a part of history by offering our feedback to this task force. This session is being recorded, and so what you say and share may actually be provided to the task force for them to use your information. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may want to leave this discussion. What you say may be provided to the task force. And with that being said, are we ready for Dr. Burgess?
Hi, Keisha, and yes, thank you for that. First of all, I want to say thank you for you, Jonathan, and Donna hosting this room. I am also a fifth-generation descendant of slaves to California, being, like John said, the case study for the Reparations Task Force. And I say that because I was like, you know, I really think that the task force, and I'm grateful for the task force. It's a robust group of people, well-educated, and very familiar with this topic. You know, the groundwork for AB 3121 was H.R. 40, which was introduced to Congress back in 1989, and has been before the legislature each year up until now. We're 32 years into this thing here. And so, yes, when you say that we are making history, we are absolutely making history. However, to be effective in this, I want the task force, so this message is directly to the task force. At this stage, I do not want it to be optics only. And I actually watched the first meeting, and I was excited, but then I was a little concerned with all of the framework that has been put around the task force to accomplish this goal, to be able to provide a proposal in 2 years. It's a huge movement, and they need the support of the community. So if we don't ask it early on, it would do us an injustice is what it would do. So saying that, I looked at the Bagley Kings Act, which gives them, they're down now to, they've had their second meeting, so they have 8 meetings to go. And so it is so imperative for them to hear from the community as to what it is that we want. So when we talk about reparations, I'm absolutely all for it. If it means payment, absolutely. Let's talk about that. But maybe we can do it as a tiered approach. Maybe we can do it for those who can actually prove it when you're talking about finances. But there's other areas of reparation that we can look at. We can look at the institution of education. We can look into the schools. We can look into employment discrimination, criminal justice, the mass incarceration, and the political participation of Black people and what's going on in 48 states where they're trying to mess with Black people's ability to vote at the polls because we have power there. So those are some things that really need to be laid out and defined in this reparations proposal, and it's crucial that they hear the voice of the community. Another case that I'd like to mention would be Biddy Mason. Biddy Mason was brought to California behind a wagon trail, a lot like our grandfather, traveled some 1,700 miles walking behind a wagon trail of her slave master. She gained her freedom once she got to California, but she was enslaved here in California. And then she went on to be a philanthropist in Los Angeles, California. I read an article this morning. John Winnington, he's a fourth-generation descendant from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and how those stories are shared have been oral narratives. So it's important for the voices of those descendants to come forward to empower, impact this task force so they have tactical, practical information about families who have experienced it. And I'm going to go ahead and be quiet and let the next person speak. But that is for my message directly to the task force.
Thank you for that, Dr. Burgess. You brought up a very valid point that this is the time and that we can't be silent. They have 2 years in which to do this, and they need to hear from us as early as possible. This is not one of those things where they're doing it in the dark and then they're going to come out at the end when they've got it completed and then offer some type of public comment just to make us feel good. This is not that. This is them trying to figure out what to do because they need to come out looking good out the gate. And so we need to get involved in these early stages. We need to get involved when it is not the end thing to do. Sometimes we don't get involved with things until we see that there are hundreds of thousands of other people on board. It's too late by then. It's too late by then. We need to get involved now. And so, again, this session is being recorded. What you say can be used and provided to the task force in a very positive way. And so we invite you to speak today. We want to hear from you. How do you feel about reparations? Do you have any thoughts about it at all? Do you not know enough about it to have an opinion? This room, and Jonathan will explain a little bit more about the room and how many more of these we plan to have and why. This room was created for that. All ethnicities, your voice will be respected. Your time will be respected. We want to hear from you what you have to say, what your thoughts are. We want to help you form an opinion if you don't have one by providing you factual information. We want you to be able to hear from others who are direct descendants, who have actual stories. We know that there are lots of Blacks, African Americans right here in California who may not have direct ties to California, but we've all experienced it just simply because we're Black. We want to hear from you too. So we want to thank Dr. Burgess for her feedback. We want to thank Marjorie Melvin for her feedback. And if you'd like to speak and provide your feedback, just raise your hand and we'll bring you to the stage. Jonathan, do you want to share a little bit with everyone about the sessions and how many more we plan to have?
Sure. Thank you for that, Keisha. And I couldn't agree more with everything that you said, you know, as far as what this room is all about, providing a safe place for, you know, your opinions on reparations, because it's a big topic. And this room, was started, because, the state of California has, put together a task force, and they are now in the process of studying, California's role in slavery and, the case for reparations as far as, what that looked like. So the first part of this is studying it. We're here to get that feedback. And as Keisha said, you are being recorded because the goal is to provide that feedback to the task force of what the community thinks. And truly, being in California, a lot of people have been told, in history and other places that California was not a slave state. In fact, it was an interesting, deal that I'll share later, within the hour. Of individuals, you'd be surprised at how many don't actually know that, California, although it may not have been a slave state where people were, sold on the blocks, by the masses, but we did in fact have slaves that were sold in California, brought to California, and worked in California. And so, and there are descendants of those individuals. I happen to be one of them. And I've got a family of several others that are, members of those descendants. So with that being said, as Keisha said, I'll just mimic, it's a safe place. We do want to hear from you. The ground rules are that, we are respectful of individuals, no profanity. We do understand passion because this is a passionate topic. And we just ask that, your comments, not to talk over others, but please raise your hand because we do want to hear from you. This is valuable information. And whether you're opposed to reparations or for reparations or just don't know enough about reparations, this is the place to have a conversation. We will have a series of, we'll be doing a call like this just about weekly, but at least, twice to three times a month as we kind of build the room. So I'd encourage those of you that are listening, please ping in a friend and get others, to listen. And it's going to take not just one person, not just this group, to ensure that, the task force is providing the community voices from all the community. So that's why I asked you to, ping in individuals to the room if you haven't, if you got friends, and just have them follow the little house and follow this room, in addition to every one of the moderators up on stage. So without further ado, if anybody wants to speak, please raise your hand, but I want to pose a question to Keisha and Donna. And I think we talked about this, maybe earlier, but so what do you say, I've heard a number of times when we talk about reparations, when we talk about it, I've heard opposition kind of say, well, people want something for nothing. And so what do you say to the person that says, well, I mean, you actually were not the slave. You didn't have any harm done to you. It was your ancestor. What do you say to that, Keisha? Donna, I mean, what do you say to that? You hear it so frequently, right?
Yeah, to that I say that's where, when you hear the phrase systemic, that's where that comes from. Slavery didn't happen to me, but there are injustices that occur to me, to others like me, on a regular basis that come from that institution of slavery. It's just evolved over time. And we don't want to accept that or believe it, but there are very clear pathways that show that to be true. We can look at the prison system and see that it's just an evolution of the slave masters. They just changed clothes. They just changed names from slave masters to police officers, to judges, and I don't say that lightly. There is very clear evidence that occurred. I had a discussion with someone earlier today and it got very passionate. I was telling them that we were doing this Clubhouse chat, and he said, I don't want to hear anything, just cut me my check. And he's an older gentleman. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he's very well educated, very well off, has done very well for himself. And he said, a lot of these people who are talking about reparations and trying to make decisions and trying to determine who gets what and how much they get, never went through anything. Now, I'm saying this from his perspective. I don't agree with that because I think that generationally we all go through something as blacks, even as a country. Even if you're white or some other ethnicity, there is something about slavery that will impact you in one way or another. But his thought process was this. When he was a young boy, he said, I can remember, he said he was 8 years old when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, and that he remembers the grief and despair that he saw on the faces of all of the adults around him when Martin Luther King Jr. died. The hopelessness. And I can't imagine living during that time. And, you know, at one point you're hailing Dr. Martin Luther King as your hope. And then like that, he's gone. And it's just made clear that he's fallible. He was saying he can remember having to give up his spot in line to a white person as a young boy. He was actually abducted by a white family down the street who accused him of stealing their basketball. They held him hostage in their home. He was traumatized. And he said he hated white people for so long. It took him years to get over that. And so for someone who's gone through that type of experience, and you talk about reparations, and then you've got someone present day who's maybe 20 or 30 years old who's never had to experience black and white discrimination, with a white person basically saying, you're a nigger and you better own that. That's who you are. Back up, you know. 20, 30, 40-year-old people, we don't experience that, especially if we live in California. But people who are 50 and 60 and 70, they were confronted with that in real time. And so their perspective is, you need to cut my check. Don't give me no program. We don't want no more programs.
You know, Key, I'm 64, and I remember when Martin Luther King, I remember that period very well, in 68. And living in New York's Long Island at the time. And I don't know what you're supposed to call, but we had Addie, who was our, well, they said we should call her our nanny, but at the time, Addie was our maid. And she was from Alabama. And, you know, she lived with us for a very long time. And I can't imagine now, thinking back, with her family being in Alabama in 1968, and she was taking care of us like we were her own children. And I have a picture of her in 1964 with us at the World's Fair, and a picture in the 70s when my sister was at a later point in time. But I remember her daughter used to visit every summer with her grandson. And I can't imagine, because I remember 1968 so vividly. I was 11 years old. So, you know, I remember that. But when you talk about family trauma, you know, it passes down to generation. It doesn't go away.
Right.
You know, we were, you know, from the Jews, there were Holocaust survivors. And they might say, well, you weren't one of them. But the families, that pain and the trauma of that goes generation down deep, and it just continues. So it's not something like, oh, well, you didn't experience it. You know, if you're one drop of it, you there is family trauma that does pass down to every generation.
Well, we were talking not long ago about things that get passed down from generation and things that are now inherent in our black culture because they were passed down, like how we discipline our children, what's culturally acceptable with how we discipline our children was actually passed down because of things that happened when our ancestors were slaves. And we view it as culturally acceptable, like, you know, whippins. Think about the word whippins, whoopins, whatever you want to call it. That came from slavery. Think about just even how we live culturally. A lot of us live in a mode of survival. So we can't really think beyond, and I don't want to use that in a broad sense, but there's a large representation of blacks in America who are in a struggle and survival mode because that has been passed down from generation to generation. We often wear with a badge of pride that we are a resilient people, and we absolutely are, but that did not come without its huge challenges from our ancestors being slaves, our families being ripped apart, still having to survive, the mom being the only one in the home with her children, with lots of children, or she was raped, or the children were taken out, still having to keep your family intact, whichever family that was, or trying to give back to your family. And then from generation to generation to generation. Now here we are present day. That's systemic trauma. So when individuals try to say, well, it didn't happen to you, but look at who I am now as a result of what happened to my ancestors.
Great. That's a great point, Keisha. Incredible. So, I mean, I think you answered that beautifully. And with that, I see Lance has been brought up to the stage. So, Lance, you've got the floor to, you know, comment or, you know, question on some of the discussion that's taken place. So thank you for your patience.
Thank you, everybody, and welcome. Yes, I first want to say I'm for reparations. I believe that reparations is supposed to repair the damage that was done to our people, and our people have definitely been damaged physically, mentally, spiritually, totally disconnected from our homeland. And during that period of slavery, those people were victims of America, and we are the children of those victims. And still, like I think her name is Keisha, said, we still carry on those traits and some of that mentality, that mindset of living in the slave master's house. And we have broken families, so we don't know how to have a family and raise a family. Breaking up needs to be repaired. I've been studying my genealogy for about 20 years, and I was able to find a link all the way to Virginia in 1619, the first ships to come to, documented ships to come to Virginia. And it means a lot to me to learn all this history, to see what's going through. So I feel, even though I didn't experience what they have experienced, by learning my history, I feel more connected to all the stories I was blessed to uncover. And what we fight through right now to be free and have equality, even with redlining, I think Donna spoke about Long Island. You know, I did the history, I learned the history about Levittown and why they wanted to separate and have their own white community. It was things like these things that are happening today and has happened in the past can only not 100% be fully corrected through reparations, but it will close that gap. And, you know, our economy, the black economy has suffered because of this. And it will level the playing field. So I'm for reparations. Even though I'm not in California, I wish you all the best, and I'm rooting for you guys. And that's it. My name is Lance. Thank you.
We appreciate that feedback. Thank you so much, Lance. We now have Mr. Rashad Hayes. You've got the floor.
Yeah, and if I could, I just want to comment on Lance's. Rashad, we'll get you right up. Lance, yeah, I do want to. Thank you. Please let us know exactly where you are from. And I will say this, and I've said it before, that although you're not from California, the goal is, you know, with California being the fifth largest economy in the world and supposedly one of the most progressive states, that we can lead and show the rest of the world why this is not only just a California but a federal initiative that needs to occur. So, and I think, you know, we'll do that. But I want to one, just please, for the record, let us know where you're from, and I want to thank you for your comments. And then, Rashid, you're up next.
New York.
That was an excellent Copy point. On. Rashad, if you unmute yourself, you can speak.
Oh, wait, I just want to say, Lance, and to everyone else in this room, be sure to follow us, the moderators, so we can invite you into this club, so when we do have these discussions, you'll be notified. And Lance, I'm from New York too, so close to Levittown.
Okay. Rashad, are you there? Are you with us? He may be off doing something.
Okay.
May I make one last point before I leave? I need to go, and I wanted to make one more point. I didn't get to say this, but I think that Donna, Jonathan, Keisha, when you all talk about reparations, it is extremely important, in my opinion, to not only mention slavery, as you guys talked about from the beginning, but talk about slavery and its lingering effects. And I didn't get to make that point when I initially spoke. You guys did kind of go over some of the things that occurred. We've got redlining and all these other things. But in addition to that, we've got mass incarceration, discrimination in employment, discrimination in contracts, the racial wealth gap. So it's always important, in my opinion, to remind the listener or the person that you're educating that it's not just slavery. There are a whole host of issues or things that occurred just because of blackness or specific lineage of being descendants of those who were enslaved in America, and specifically black Americans, the experience of black Americans in the state of California. And so that leads me to my next point. I was a deputy commissioner for the Board of Parole Hearings, and in that capacity, I determined if people should be released from prison. And one of the things I observed early on was the number of black men in our state prisons. And I would see these men, return to prison for an ounce of marijuana. Things now that are making people wealthy. Black men were returned to prison and prevented from being able to work and start families and live productive lives. And that is a real way in which black folk, black men, black families were harmed in the state of California for drugs that were brought into our communities. And another way, a real tangible way that I am seeing the lingering effects of slavery in the state of California is in foster care. One of the matters or the cases I now hear are foster care cases. And I am seeing mostly black and brown families in the foster care system. And these people are being denied the opportunity to care for their children. And let me give you one example. I had a young lady appeal a decision by the county. They denied her the right to be a foster parent for her own family member. And they claim the reason they denied her, I want you guys to hear me out. They denied her because they said her mother had been a drug addict and her mother had been to prison. And so for that reason, she didn't have good character and she did not have the ability nor the mental capacity that she had not dealt with histories of issues of having had a mom being in and out of the prison, and for that reason she was not a good person to care for a family member who was now in the foster care system. And had I not been the administrative judge in her hearing, she would not have gotten her relative to be a foster parent to. She would have been denied that opportunity. And that would have been breaking up families even more. So we've got to look at the lingering effects of slavery. And that's one of the things that I want you guys to, if you believe it's appropriate, to mention as you talk about reparations.
Marjorie, thank you so much for that. And for the sake of time, we didn't go into the details about the lingering effects. As a matter of fact, I think someone brought up that topic, which caused us to delve into it. But in the future, I agree with you that it is something that we should probably plug into the foundation, even as we reset the group, just so that we can make it an ongoing narrative so that people understand where this discussion is coming from and why it's pertinent to today. Thank you very much for that.
Yep, Margaret, I'd just like to chime in and say thank you. Point taken. And I do believe, you know, I don't know if you were on earlier, but Dr. Burgess made a lot of mention and had a lot to say about, you know, the mass incarceration.
Hold on, I need to be back
off. But that's something that we want to incorporate. And
Jonathan, you're in the matrix. You're in the matrix. You might want to leave and come back in when we lost the audio on you.
Yeah, your audio is
are
slow.
You there?
No.
Jonathan, log okay. out and log back in.
Yes.
Okay, so he's going to log out and log back in.
But yeah, that just happened.
Just to Marjorie's point, there are a number of things that have occurred, a number of tragedies that have occurred throughout history leading up to today that point back to the need for reparations. We will actually, because of we're approaching the end of the hour, I think Jonathan's getting back on. We don't want to dive into that today, but we do want to invite you all back, invite your friends. Again, this is a discussion where we are trying to provide a safe space, and we do realize that this is a very sensitive issue. It's a very, if you are for it, you're passionate about it. If you're against it, you're passionate about it. But we want to take your information, share it with the task force, because you are helping them construct what reparations should look like. Jonathan, are you back with us?
I was waiting. I wanted to veggie back on Marjorie. It's a lot of other things we have to understand played a huge role after slavery. Everyone keeps wanting to only focus on that.
Rashad.
Rather than the Homestead Act.
Rashad, I muted you because we want you to introduce where you're from and who you are before you speak.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, I was just responding. So we're not doing responses. This is my actual turn. That's what you're saying.
Oh, no. We actually invited you to speak a while back. I don't think you heard us. We were calling for you.
Thank you. I didn't know. Thank you.
No problem. Rashad,
the Grandmaster of East Atlanta, Georgia. My family is from Georgia on both sides, right, tracing back to the 1700s. And from New York, we had gotten free and became blacksmiths in New York, actually. And there's also some American Native in there. And one of my great-great-grandfathers actually... his father came from Jamaica in the 1600s to Virginia, and he died in a house fire with five kids when my grandfather was 17. My great-great-great-grandfather was 17. And then he took his little brothers and sisters and moved to Georgia. And he moved to North Carolina and had a wife, and she died giving birth. So he had all five of them, his siblings, and he had the kids that she had, which was seven kids. Then he moved to Georgia, relocated again, and his wife died giving birth as well after five more kids. And then he met my great-great-grandma, who was a Native American, and they had another 10 kids. So he had 24 kids, eight and 19 of his own and five of his siblings.
And so we, our enslaved history is runs deep, you know, and I really appreciate and respect it. I wanted to speak to what Marjorie said with the denial of the Homestead Act. And I also wanted to speak on the redlining that we still see today. So when you talk about reparations and repairing, you have to talk about everything, all in a cumulative. You can't just focus on one because the atrocities did not stop after slavery. We do understand we made so much money and put it in the $75 million in the U.S. Freedmen's Bank after 9 years of being free. And the evil white people came and they actually stole and mismanaged that money and ended up closing the bureau. And that alone would have been worth billions of dollars today. With also with the neglect of the land and the stealing of the lands, and then you incorporate the mass incarceration and the crack, and I mean, slavery hasn't stopped, you know. So we just have to take into account everything. I thank y'all for the space, and the task force is needed across the nation, so I'm happy you all have given a start in the platform for us all to be repaired, and I'll yield right there.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you. We appreciate hearing from you from down south and empathize. My heart breaks hearing your story because that it's a very common story. And when you talk about the millions and billions of dollars that things that were taken away could be worth today, it just, for them to try to put a number on reparations today, for someone to say, oh, that's too much. For those of us who know, it's like, oh, no, that's not enough. And if you don't know your history, then you don't know why we would say that's not enough. So thank you for sharing that. Jonathan.
Absolutely. And then if I could just mention on that, the key, thank you so much. And a lot of people don't know about the New York City. Everyone knows about the Tulsa, Oklahoma, being a Black Wall Street, but it was actually over 75 Black Wall Streets, and one of them being Seneca Village, which today we know as Central Park, and they misplaced, it was the 257 or 357 Black families there, and when we think about how it's the most expensive real estate in the world to this day, right behind Dubai now, of course, then we understand that even Central Park would be worth billions and billions and billions in reparations alone from the lost money, because that was our land too. And this story plays out throughout the country, and we do know the highways, pretty much all the major highways, were driven right through Black Wall Streets.
Absolutely.
And they relocated people as well. Thank you. I yield.
Thank you. Jonathan, this room was supposed to be for 1 hour. Would you like to jump in with... How much longer will it be?
Yeah, I mean, I want to give everybody, I see Texas came up, but at least those that have raised their hand, the opportunity to speak. And, you know, we'll go until the half hour, 3:30, and then we'll close the room out. But, you know, if those others want to speak, please raise your hand, but text you up. And so, Rashid, thank you for the comments. That's incredible history. We realize that, you know, this is not only California, but it's happened across the nation. And we may have, you know, our great-great-grandfather came from Virginia as well, and so I'd love to talk to you offline. Make sure you hit me up or send me a message, and let's do some genealogy. So with that being said, Tex, you're up. You got the mic.
Thank you, Brother Jonathan, brothers and sisters. The whole reason that reparations is a buzzword in the 21st century was due to
an online group. One second, Tex, could you just let us know where you're calling from? And we'll take, and you know, that way we can document. And just so you know, if you didn't hear, we are recording this because we do want to use it. It may be used for the task force, so I want to give that disclaimer and then ask that you just state where you're from.
I'm from New Jersey, by way of Alabama, South Kakilaki, and Greenwood, Florida. So, like I said, the whole reason reparations is a buzzword in the 21st century is because a ragtag group of online accounts on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook were advocating for Black Americans to withhold their vote unless any candidate supported reparations. Hashtags no Black agenda, no vote, politics as an exchange, and these other hashtags is what really the reason that why we're talking about this now. and reason that we have a task force in California and all these other local reparations initiatives. Now, I just want to bring to everyone's attention that whether you follow the original Eidos movement or whether you are a person who is following a different branch of that movement, that there's an ongoing effort right now to silence that online dissent that created this movement. They're trying to label these organizations as misinformation campaigns aimed at black voter suppression. And that is furthest from the truth. And I just implore everyone to fight back on that. And follow the hashtag Poison Ivy and Crimson Smear, because one particular late attack was from the Harvard Kennedy School, which tries to label the Eidos movement as a voter suppression, black voter suppression, black misinformation campaign. And if this is successful, this whole thing will run out of steam, in my opinion. So I implore you all to be active on Twitter and support these hashtags and tamping down this attempt to silence people. They've already silenced 12 anti-vaxxers. Jen Psaki has a press conference in which they are depressed. They're shutting down like 12 anti-vax people, including Robert Kennedy Jr., shutting down their social media accounts. RZA Islam is another person. These people are just critical of some of the vaccine information, but they're labeling them as harmful and anti and misinformation campaigns. And this is very, very insidious and very dangerous. It has the potential to shut down all dissent. So that's just all I wanted to say. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Lance. Thank you for that information. I'm sorry, was that Tex? That was Tex. My apologies. Thank you, Tex, for that.
I don't care what you call me, long as you call me.
I was looking at Lance and listening to Tex. Jonathan. Did we want to go ahead and end the discussion at this point so that we are only a little bit over versus go out there till 3:30?
Yeah, I mean, if no one else had comments, or I just want to make sure we got through the comments. So, yeah, for the essence of everybody's time joining us on their Sunday, we appreciate it. Please follow the room, and this is just one of many discussions. We thank you for coming.
Weaponization of immigration against the American descendants of slavery.
That's plenty. There's a lot to discuss.
I didn't catch what he said. Rashad, can you make that?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I said, did anyone touch on the weaponization of immigration against the American descendants of chattel slavery?
No, just to clarify that this room is to hear feedback about pros and cons regarding reparations. And so, you know, in the event that we want to provide history and background, we want to make sure that it is in line with what Marjorie had said earlier. Here's what happened. And we want to hear from everyone because we need to help mitigate the narrative that goes out there as reparations is getting ready to happen, if that makes sense. We want to control the misinformation. As Tex was talking about, the individuals who are being attacked and trying to be silenced. We want to make sure that as a community, not just of blacks, but everyone, that we are all on the same page and of the same understanding and mindset of what happened and why reparations needs to happen and what it needs to look like.
Great. Thank you for that, Keisha. I just called Tiffany up.
Absolutely.
Raise your hand to speak. Okay, so
I would say if you want to get involved, follow CJAC on Twitter. That's the Coalition for Just and Equitable California. That's the organization that's basically working with the task force to help with community engagement as well as putting forth proposals for the task force. So if you look on Twitter, you can find CJAC, CJEC, and that is the way to get involved in real life
We actually did share that information at the beginning, Tiffany, so we we should say it each time we reset the room. I gave the website of cjecofficial.org, but as Tiffany stated, you can also follow them on Twitter as well.
Perfect. Dr. Burgess, I think you had a few. I see you unmuted your mic. Did you have something you wanted to add before you close the room out?
Yeah, I just had a recommendation maybe for the next meeting that we actually talk about some of the issues that were on the agenda topic that came before the task force in their last meeting, you know, and just be able to kind of deconstruct some of those things and provide input in those areas.
I'm taking notes. We will make that happen in the next discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, all right. I want to thank everybody for coming, spending their time. And this pretty much concludes this conversation. We went about 12 minutes over. Again, we know that we realize this is a robust topic. And, you know, we will have a series of these. Check the calendar, follow the little greenhouse for the room, get the updates. And please, you know, ping somebody else in the room that you may have been talking to that, you know, wants to know more or has an opinion, because that's what we want to hear. So without further ado, Keisha, I'll let you leave any closing comments, and we'll close the room out.
I have no closing comments. Thank you, everyone, for taking time out on your Sunday to participate.
Thank you both for hosting.
What up, Tech? You there, Tech?
I'm sorry, sis. I'm outside working on my garage, which is almost collapsed at this point. I'm trying to jack it up.
Well, you gotta get that together.
Yeah. I got my destruction hat on and everything. Wish me luck.
Sorry, guys. I was waiting for Jonathan to end the room, but Jonathan, are you going to end the room?
Yeah, I was just... You know, I'm still new on this app a little bit. Well, some of the moderating stuff, so we gotta figure it out.
No worries. I got you. I got you. See y'all next Sunday.
Okay. All right. See you, Tiffany.
Bye. Thank you.